You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today, oh boy, today, you know what we're talking about?
What?
Snakes and lizards and dinosaurs. We're going to be talking about reptile dysfunction, the triune brain theory and behavioral challenges. So it's a theory of the human brain that kind of puts conceptually it into categories, and one of them at the base of the brain is the reptilian brain. It's how our core brain is very similar to a reptile, not that it's constructed like a reptilian brain, but from a standpoint of it has drives and it has internal motivations like hunger, reproduction, stuff. That reptilian brain, it's like the automatic part of us that moves us to things. And when that's dysfunctional, that can be a problem.
Yes, definitely.
But we're going beyond that. We're going beyond the reptilian brain, and we're going to be looking at the paleomammalian, or we'll call it just the mammal brain. And then we'll talk about the human brain, which is called the neo, or the neocortex, or the neomammalian brain. Okay. Oh my gosh, lots of words.
Yeah.
Lots of fun. So let's get into it. Let's get right into these slides. The triune brain, what is it? Well, the outermost portion of, if you look at this little diagram here, that red portion, and just like look at it as like an ice cream cone, right? Where you've got the cone and you've got a scoop of ice cream on top and then you got a bigger scoop on top of that. Here we've got some lime and lemon and raspberry.
Yeah, maybe it's, what is the green one?
Green?
Pistachio.
Pistachio, could be
pistachio.
That too. But in any case, the outermost portion of the brain, which is thought to be the most recent development in evolution, we'll call the human brain, and that's called the neocortex, neo being new, right? Neocortex. The mammal brain, which somebody calls the mammal brain, somebody calls it the paleo mammal brain or mammalian brain, is where the limbic system is. And the reptilian brain that we're going to start our discussion with is that brain stem and cerebellum. It's the base of the brain. It's where all the functions start that keep us alive without us really thinking about it that much. Motivate us to do things too, like eat.
Mm-hmm. The natural instinct, maybe?
A lot of instincts in there. And what else do we have here? Oh, so based upon that, let's just put that to the side for a moment. Let's talk about long-term romantic relationships, because this is all going to fit together somehow. We're going to make it fit like a puzzle. A puzzle with all these pieces that you're like, what are we making?
With a scissor.
We'll force them into each other. But let's go into the top five romantic relationship challenges.
Okay.
Number one. Communication issues. When you have misunderstandings and a lack of effective communication, this can lead to conflicts. Over time, partners may struggle to express needs and emotions clearly. So communication. Number two, loss of intimacy. Physical and emotional intimacy can wane, leading to feelings of disconnection. Busy lives and stress can reduce the frequency of intimate moments. It's kind of like that movie we saw last night.
Mm-hmm.
The one, I'm not sure it was a really great movie, but it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, the message is you spend more time working versus family time.
And you spend more time working for many different reasons. In the case of this movie, the gentleman was spending more time working because he was trying to please and get attention from his father. His father, who had passed away years ago, but he thought the only way to get his father's attention, even though the father had passed, was to work really hard.
And also for the family, too.
To get the attention of the family?
No,
or, oh, you
provide,
mean to support?
Provide support and money for the family.
I show my love by working hard.
Yeah.
Let's continue on with that. Managing conflicts. That's a big one, right? In relationships. Disagreements are inevitable, and the ability to resolve them constructively is crucial. Long-term relationships require navigating repeated conflicts and maintaining harmony. So that's another thing. That's the third top challenge of long-term romantic relationships. Let's look at number four here. Oh, this is always a good one, right? Balancing independence and togetherness. Maintaining a balance between personal independence and partnership can be difficult. Partners may struggle to find a healthy middle ground between time together and time apart, or too much time apart and too much time together. Right?
You want to balance. Yes, yeah, definitely.
And then evolving expectations, not in evolution, but just evolving your expectations. Over time, personal goals and expectations within the relationship can change, right? Adapting to these changes requires flexibility and understanding from both partners. So what do you think about balancing time apart and together?
Yeah, the time that if you are always together, you may be suffocate.
Suffocate. And I told you about that years ago. I went out with a woman, very nice woman, and we had a wonderful time together at a restaurant, going to a movie. And she said to me, if we continue to go out, we're going to spend all our time together. I'm like, what do you mean? Oh, you're not going to go out by yourself anymore. We're going to go out together. We're going to go out with our friends, couple friends. And I'm like thinking to myself, whoa, I'm just meeting you. I don't know if I want to do this.
But did you see the last week I out the show?
I missed Lizette. She was away last week. You heard her on the phone. That was under the microphone over here. I think it's very interesting is that different people will have different varying wants as how much they want to be with each other. So they have to have some kind of balance, meaning you can't want to always spend time together and the other person never wanting, or the other way around. Yeah, yeah. There's got to be somewhere in the middle that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? What else do we have here? Let's continue on with this and go, why is our reptilian brain, why can't we get our brains wrapped around these challenges? And let's look at why the reptilian brain can't. Well, it focuses on survival instincts. So that part of the brain, the reptilian brain, is primarily concerned with just basic survival needs and instinctual behaviors. It really doesn't care about the other person unless it's simply to have continuation of the species. The challenge, it operates on a fight or flight basis, which can lead to reactive and defensive behaviors in conflicts rather than constructive problem solving.
Wow.
So the reptilian brain just is fight or flight. And what is also interesting is when you're hungry and your reptilian brain kicks in, when you're angry and your reptilian brain kicks in, when you're emotional and you're when you are in your reptilian brain, meaning when you're in that fight or flight or survival mode, and then you try to interact in a relationship, that's bad.
Yeah, you know, handle a good communication in this move, you know.
So our natural instincts are not set up for long-term romantic relationships.
Wow.
In fact, do you know where the chemistry is for actually mating? Mm-hmm. For long-term relationship is not in there. It's in the limbic system. It's in the mammalian brain. It's not in
that's
the lizard
interesting,
brain.
That's interesting, but what can the animal have a long-term relationship? That's good to investigate.
Turtles.
No.
Ducks do, right? Certain ducks do, birds.
No, they need to stay because the human handle, but I guess they did.
I used to, when I grew up, we had this pond, and there were these two ducks, and they'd always show up together. And for years, it would be a pair of ducks, and you knew it, they were the same ducks.
The same couple, okay.
Yeah, it was a couple of ducks. They were very ducky. They were lucky in relationship. Lucky and ducky.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So how about the middle brain? How about the mammalian brain, the little bit higher functioning brain, the limbic brain, the brain that deals with emotions?
Okay.
Okay, so the reptilian brain deals with instincts. Survival.
Mm-hmm.
Now the limbic brain, the mammalian brain, deals with emotions and other things. But let's start there. So what are the challenges with it? Well, what does the limbic system do? It governs emotions and social bonding. It is highly reactive. And they're saying, but it is, or I'm saying, but it is highly reactive and driven by immediate emotional responses. So still, the mammalian brain is reactive with emotion rather than reactive with survival and instinct. Challenge, this can lead to intense emotional reactions to perceived slights or conflicts, making it difficult to maintain emotional stability and rational communication over the long term. Oh, now I'm seeing it. Two-thirds of our brain already is bad for a relationship.
Yeah, that's the reason.
That is. Two-thirds. That's why you need four relationships to have one good one.
Can be your family, your kid,
it can
and
be
your
other
wife,
things.
Yes.
It can be many other things. Well, the interesting thing is that we're talking about the core of us. The core human being isn't really set up for success in long-term relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the chemical bonding we do starts happening because that's natural to us.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the complexities of today's relationships, they're just we're not naturally selected to have good ability to deal with the complexities of today's relationships.
So they mean that the hardware is not prepared for the software.
The hardware is not prepared for the software. That's true.
Okay.
So with new programs and new patterns and things that we have to deal with, we're not ready.
Mm-hmm.
What else we have here? So we talked about that. Oh, we have to talk about the human brain.
Okay.
The human brain, which sits on top of all these other brains. Let's get to that next slide. What does it do? The neocortex is responsible for higher order thinking. Oh, that sounds pretty good. It's there for planning and self-control. But it evolved more recently and is still developing its capacity to manage the complex demands of modern relationships. Let's also talk about how much of it's developed through education, learning, assimilation, and just seeing what's around you and your environment.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge, while it's capable of abstract thinking and empathy, the neocortex often struggles with the emotional and instinctual pulls from the other brain regions, making it difficult to consistently maintain the patience, understanding, and flexibility needed in long-term relationships.
Hmm.
What I found interesting there is that it is struggling with the pull of instincts and emotion from the other two brains, which almost sounds like something Freudian. It almost sounds like the ego in a way, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to actually compare that to Freud's theory and his model.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to compare the three brains to the id, the ego, and the superego, and to see how they line up, because Freud's theory came way before this theory.
This theory, this insert.
So when we come back, we're actually going to do that. We're going to take a look at Freud's theory of the id, the ego, and the superego, and see how that overlays on top of the reptilian, the mammalian, and the human, or the paleo mammalian and the neo mammalian.
The two
brain. The three
the
brains.
Number one,
the triune.
Two, and three. More easy to say.
When we come back. See you in a minute.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about reptile dysfunction. The triune brain, the reptilian brain, the mammalian brain, the human brain, kind of the different development, what's in our head. We're trying to take what's in our head and get it out on the table. We're trying to discuss it. Well, no one can see that. Maybe we'll bring it in for one of the next segments, the brain. We've got a brain, a human brain, on the table in front of us.
So fresh.
What is the triune brain? Well, it was a concept that was proposed by neuroscientist Paul MacLean in the 1960s. So it's been around for, 60 years almost now. Mm-hmm. It is a model of the brain's evolutionary development. It's just a model. It suggests the human brain is made up of three distinct parts, each representing a stage in evolution. The reptilian brain is that green part, the pistachio brain, the other word for it. I painted that green there in the picture in order to be, it's green in our little model here too. Mm-hmm. But it's green to represent reptile, right? Reptilian. It is the brain stem and the cerebellum. It is the part of the brain that is the autopilot. It's the fight and flight portion of the brain. It's the instincts and drives portion of the brain. And then the yellow part, which is the paleomammalian brain, which is the limbic system, is where emotions, memories, habits, and attachments form, like we were talking about before, in relationships. It's where the chemicals that are the, the attachment chemicals, when they're released, that's where they impact us. And then the neomammalian brain, or the human brain, is the neocortex. It's that red portion. It's the outermost. And it is where language, abstract thought, imagination, consciousness, reasoning, and rationalizing take place. Mm-hmm. At least I think that's where they do.
You rationalize
that. I rationalize that right now. That's what's going on. The interesting part about this is it's all interesting, but let's talk about the reptilian portion of the brain. Mm-hmm. The basic category of it is in discussion. It's primitive. It's instinctual part of the brain. It's where those drives are. It controls basic survival functions such as heart rate, breathing, body temperature, and balance. It's responsible for instinctual behaviors like aggression, dominance, territoriality, and ritualistic behavior. This part of the brain is highly resistant to change, and it's primarily reactive. So again, it's a reactive part of the brain that it almost has its core directive. It's like the core directive of yourself. So I bet you there's a little bit of personality in there, and it's a lot of stuff that doesn't change over time.
But I guess that the main objective is survive.
Survive and do a radio show in the morning. No, that's not part of it. How about number two?
Okay.
The second part of the brain, the paleomammalian brain, which is the limbic system, which is also just known as the mammalian brain, is the emotional and social brain. It takes cues from society. It wants to fit in. There's an emotional component to it. It manages emotions, memories, and social behaviors. It includes structures like the amygdala, which is the emotional processing part of the brain, the hippocampus, which is memory formation, and the hypothalamus, which regulates bodily functions like hunger and sleep. It is central to the experience and expression of emotions and plays a crucial role in forming relationships and social bonding. It is the feelings to things. Like if you're angry, you're happy, you love, all those things happen in that part of the brain, the mammalian part of the brain. Continue on with that. How did I miss one? The neomammalian. The neomammalian is the neocortex, which is also considered the human brain. It is the rational thinking part of the brain. It's responsible for higher order brain functions such as reasoning, problem solving, abstract thought, and complex language. The neocortex is involved in conscious thought and planning, and it allows for flexible, adaptive behavior. Neocortex is what allows us to navigate the more complex parts of life. Mm-hmm. It allows us to navigate the complexities and challenges in relationships. So it's just not all emotional. It also is the part of our brain that we can develop, right? We can develop it more by thinking, by reading, by talking, by associating.
Okay.
And this is where all the solutions come in to challenges we have, is that we have control over that piece. So let's look at Freud's psychoanalytical model and the triune brain. So when you look at them together, they both offer frameworks to understand the complexity of human behavior. This overview aligns Freud's concepts of the id, ego, and superego with the triune brain's reptilian brain, paleomammalian brain, and neomammalian brain, respectively. So this is our take on it. Freud was never around. He does not approve nor disprove, agree nor disagree with our concept, nor does the developer of the triune brain theory. Mm. This is our take on it. And I think probably others may have had the same one. The id. The id is the most primitive part of the psyche, operating on the pleasure principle. We think that's pretty similar to the reptilian brain. It seeks immediate gratification of basic needs and desires, such as hunger, thirst, aggression, without consideration of reality or morality. The reptilian brain. This part of the brain controls the basic survival functions, instinctual behaviors like aggression, dominance, and territoriality. It operates automatically and is primarily concerned with survival. So those are very similar, aren't, mm-hmm. are they not? What else do we have here? The key points. Instinctual drives, both the id and the reptilian brain are driven by primal instinctual urges. They're automatic and unconscious. The id functions unconsciously and the reptilian brain governs automatic reflexive behaviors. Again, very similar. And finally, as an example, when a person feels an immediate urge to eat when they are hungry, regardless of whether it is appropriate to do so, for example, during a meeting, this is the id and the reptilian brain at work, seeking instant gratification. Mm-hmm. So it almost seems like it's the triune theory is one step beyond where somebody was able to understand the structures of the brain and then associated them with Freud's theory. Yeah. I wonder if that's how it happened. I have to read more about it. How about the superego? The superego represents the moral conscious and societal norms guiding behavior according to internalized values and ideals. It often works in opposition to the id's desires. This is where we're trying to compare the superego and the paleomammalian brain, the limbic system, the emotional part of the brain. So we just talked about the superego, but let's look at the brain. Look at the paleomammalian brain, the mm-hmm. limbic system. The brain structure manages emotions and social behaviors and memory. It plays a role in forming bonds, experiencing emotions like guilt or pride, and regulating social interactions. So I think part of this is we're going to talk about how in the past we've said with your ego, your consciousness, you can put into yourself beliefs and values and things that will affect you emotionally. When you are congruent, when your actions are congruent with your beliefs, mm-hmm. you feel good about it. You don't have that cognitive dissonance. And so by challenging yourself with new thoughts, you can create new paths that are more natural for you and that you feel more comfortable taking. Or they can make things that used to be uncomfortable more comfortable.
Yeah.
How about the superego in the paleomammalian brain? Again, key points of the similarity. Moral and emotional guidance. Both the superego and the limbic system are involved in guiding behavior based on emotions and social norms. Internalized rules. The superego internalizes societal values, while the limbic system helps regulate emotions that are influenced by social contexts. So it seems like they reinforce each other in theory. One is paying attention to social context, and the other one is helping make behavior, push behavior that's congruent with social and societal norms. Let's have an example here. When a person feels guilty for breaking a rule, this guilt is a function of the superego, while the emotional processing of that guilt occurs in the limbic system. So hand in hand. So emotionally, I feel guilt in the limbic system. The superego is telling me I should feel guilty.
Yeah.
So one's programming and one is the physical response to it. How about the ego? The ego operates on the reality principle, balancing the demands of the id, the restrictions of the superego, and the realities of the external world. It engages in conscious thought, decision-making, and planning. We're comparing that to the neomammalian brain, or the human brain, the neocortex, the most recent development in evolution of what we believe in the order of the evolution of the human brain. The neomammalian brain, this part of the brain is responsible for higher order cognitive functions like reasoning, abstract thought, problem solving, and the regulatory of behavior, or should I say the regulation of behavior, in a society.
Socially,
thank you. This part of the brain is responsible for higher order cognitive functions like reasoning, abstract thought, problem solving, and the regulation of behavior in a socially acceptable manner. So it's consciously trying to do these things. And then you go back to the reptilian brain and the id, they don't really care about social context. The only reason they would is if social context was part of survival.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about that. This is like the cycle. So you need to keep survive, but you need to adjust in the social. So the way that you be alive is you need to dance with the social rules.
You do. So some of those drives and motivation from the id or from the reptilian brain could be the things that instinctually created the ability for humans to survive. And part of that might be getting along with other people.
Yeah.
Part of that might be, you know, smiling when you're happy and being angry when you're angry. And that moves more into the limbic system. But it's also part of the survival. So it's learned behavior. I mean, lots of animals have similar expressions when they're angry and upset, right?
Yeah.
So these things could be inborn even from a very simplistic brain standpoint, that things that create survival are being able to show anger or being able to show love or affection.
Yes.
That may be part of survival, which pushes that down into the id or down into the reptilian brain. Key points of this would be conscious mediation is what the ego does and the neomammalian brain. Both the ego and the neocortex are involved in conscious processing, decision-making, and mediating between internal desires and external realities. There's a balancing act that happens. The ego balances primal urges with societal expectations, while the neocortex integrates information from more primitive brain structures to guide behavior in a rational and thoughtful way. Although there is a comparison of these two, it seems like they're almost exactly the same. Maybe there's an example that we can share. When a person plans a healthy meal instead of impulsively grabbing fast food, the ego, through the neocortex, is balancing the id's desire for immediate pleasure with long-term health goals influenced by societal norms, the superego. Kind of shows how everything balances together.
Yeah.
But that I find is very, very, very interesting.
Yeah.
So in summary of this section of our show, the id we have associated with the reptilian brain. Both are driven by primal survival-oriented instincts. The superego is related to the paleomammalian brain, or the mammalian brain. Both guide behavior based upon internalized social norms and emotions. And then the ego is similar to the neo-mammalian brain or the human brain, the most recent development. Both mediate between internal drives and external realities during conscious thought and planning. So remember, the ego connects us to the outside world too. We do see the outside world through our consciousness, which is what that neo-mammalian brain is doing as well. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this, maybe have some tips on how we can reprogram ourselves to take advantage of the areas we can change in order to help the areas that are much more difficult to change. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to the Reptilian Brain with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about the reptilian brain. We're talking about reptile dysfunction. And the triune brain and what it does and how it works and why it's important to us to kind of have an understanding and concept of our brain to understand what we can do to maybe adjust behaviors that we want to adjust. And also maybe to understand behaviors that others have, that some of these things are instinctual and some they're inborn. To start off with, let's go right into behavioral dysfunctions and the triune brain. The triune brain model divides the brain into the three parts: the reptilian brain, paleo-mammalian brain, and the neo-mammalian brain, also known as the limbic system or the mammalian brain, which is that center one, and then the neo-mammalian and neocortex or the human brain, the more human of the brain, the ability to think and change. Each part is associated with specific functions and potential behavioral dysfunctions. Overview of these dysfunctions, including their associations with the brain structures, examples, research backing, nature or nurture aspects, root causes, and potential treatments, is what we're about to embark on in this section. Now, there's so much to cover here. We're going to just simplify this and just give a couple examples.
Okay.
We're going to look at a couple examples of reptilian brain dysfunction, of mammalian brain dysfunction, and human brain dysfunction, where are the causes, and maybe what are the ways of therapy, if there are therapy. All right, so let's start off with that and go to, here are the three different brain portions and some of the dysfunctions that happen. The reptilian brain, usually you can find psychopathy, aggression and violence, obsessive compulsive disorder as being rooted in the reptilian brain. In the paleomammalian brain, in the limbic system with emotions, you find anxiety disorders, major depression disorder, borderline personality disorder in that area of the brain. And in the neomammalian brain, or the neocortex, or the most human portion of the brain, you have neuroticism, narcissist personality disorder, and schizophrenia. So why it's important to understand where these things occur is, part of it is what caused them and what treatments may be available for them. And these are not just the challenges of a relationship, but these are to understand that there are some big challenges that may be much bigger than relationship challenges that also happen in the brain. And if we're not dealing with those, we have the opportunity to deal with the challenges of long-term relationships with people we know and love.
Yeah, more you understand what happened, you may be found.
So let's solution. Yes. So let's look at one. Let's look at psychopathy. In psychopathy, the association, it can be linked to the dysfunction of the reptilian brain. It shows up in issues in managing instinctual behaviors and emotional depth. Example, individuals may engage in manipulative or harmful behavior without guilt or remorse because of the drive coming from the reptilian brain. It reflects on the reptilian brain's cold, survival-focused processing. So behavior that drives from the reptilian brain can be absent of emotion. Does that make some sense?
Yes.
Psychopaths show reduced activity in emotional regulation areas in the limbic system and heightened activity in the basal ganglia, which may drive predatory behaviors. And again, the basal ganglia is part of the reptilian brain. So you have more activity in the reptilian brain, less in the emotional processing part of the brain, and then you get psychopathic behavior, which is you do behaviors and you feel no emotion about having a behavior. So what is nature? What is nurture? Nature or nurture? Nature, strong genetic components with a significant heritable factor for being a psychopath. Nurture, childhood trauma or neglect can exacerbate tendencies. It can make them stronger, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's both nature and nurture, but there is a strong nature component that you can be born with it. So here's some root causes. Dysfunctions in the reptilian brain lead to a lack of emotional depth and impaired empathy. Treatment. Well, guess what? It's difficult to treat, but behavioral therapies can help. Consistent structure or reinforcement are beneficial. Pharmacological treatments have limited effectiveness. Now, let's go into that. Since the challenge a lot of times is in the reptilian brain, mm-hmm. and there's not a lot of thought going on there, there's just a lot of drive, right? Instincts and drive, that really the only place that you can try to affect it is in, say, cognitive behavioral therapy, in actually being conscious that you have this behavior and that you want to change it. But if you have no emotional response to having the behavior, maybe you feel fine doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so psychopaths, as you saw the note here, it's difficult to treat, but behavioral therapies can help if you recognize
that you have the problem.
And that's the tough part,
it's
right?
It's tough because many people maybe have and figure out it's okay.
Or they are very successful because of being a psychopath.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is we may not like psychopath behavior, but there's a tendency for psychopath-type people to have those tendencies. Leaders, politicians, CEOs mm-hmm. seem to have less emotional connection to their actions.
Yeah.
And there can be a certain level of it that it's a psychopathic tendency, but it's not an outright, like, a killer psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
It can be, you know, somebody
who's a soft way.
A soft psychopath.
Exactly.
Maybe you don't like them, but they're not out to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Just there to take all your money.
You avoid sometimes when you know the people is around.
That's it. Let's go on with this one. So I'm going to we're going to skip into now the mammalian brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the mammalian brain. Anxiety disorders. The limbic system, particularly like the amygdala, plays a central role in processing fear and anxiety. Overactivity in this region can lead to chronic anxiety disorders. A person with generalized anxiety may experience persistent, uncontrollable worry triggered by overactive limbic system's response to perceived threats. Research has shown that individuals with anxiety disorders often have heightened amygdala activity, which correlates with the excessive fear and anxiety they experience. So they really are experiencing more of emotion, more mm-hmm. of something than someone else, because there's an overactivity
mm-hmm.
in the emotional center, the limbic system, which is the mammalian or the paleomammalian part of the brain, right? So there's this in the limbic system, in the emotions, it's overactive. So what's nature and what's nurture with this? Genetic predisposition is often linked to neurotransmitter imbalances, especially involving the amygdala. So this can be inherited. Nurture, environmental stressors, trauma, learned behaviors can significantly contribute to the development of anxiety disorders. The root cause, overactivity in the limbic system we just spoke about, particularly the amygdala, leads to heightened fear and anxiety responses. Mm-hmm. CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, including techniques like cognitive restructuring and exposure therapy, is effective in treating anxiety disorders. Medications such as SSRIs, and benzodiazepines. I think I'm going to skip this part. There are various treatments that may be effective. Something interesting about this is we talked about epigenetics mm-hmm. a couple of shows ago, where you may have a tendency for something, but you need to be triggered for that to be triggered, to mm-hmm. actually be, to become, what does that become, active. Right? So you can have a tendency, but it's got to be turned on to and the word's not exposed, but I'll remember the word in a minute here, where the when something becomes, come on, you're gonna, we have to
stop.
Another thing that we can look at right now is we looked at one for the reptilian brain, one for the limbic system or the mammalian brain. Let's look at the human brain or the neo-mammalian brain or the neocortex. Let's look at a situation that can occur with that where there's a dysfunction and how that might be treatable. Mm-hmm. So we have this one here, which is neuroticism. Neuroticism involves heightened sensitivity to stress and tendency towards anxiety, which can result from an overactive or dysfunctional neocortex, particularly in an area involved in threat perception and emotional regulation. Example, a person high in neuroticism may overanalyze situations and catastrophize, leading to chronic stress and anxiety. Studies have found that neuroticism is linked to increased activity in the prefrontal cortex and anterior cingulate cortex, regions associated with emotional processing and self-reflection. So, in the brain part that we have a lot more control over, there can be overactive parts of it. So even though we have control over developing parts of our brain doesn't mean it. We may have been given a pickup truck, but we can change the wheels on it. And so what we're talking about is that we, even though our brain is highly malleable in the neocortex mm-hmm. through neuroplasticity and other things, that there can be parts of the brain that just have challenges to begin with. But it would seem to me that means these are more treatable. And let's see if that's true. So let's go down to the treatments. Cognitive behavioral therapy is effective in helping individuals with high neuroticism develop healthier thought patterns and coping strategies. Mindfulness-based therapies can also reduce rumination and stress reactivity. So I want to go back up to the nature. Neuroticism has a genetic component and is linked to brain structures associated with emotion regulation. Through nurture, though, environmental factors such as chronic stress or negative upbringing can exacerbate neurotic tendencies. Dysfunction or overactive processing in the neocortex, particularly in areas like the prefrontal cortex, leads to heightened sensitivity to stress and anxiety. But then again, it's talking about cognitive behavioral therapy and not drugs. Mm-hmm. might be a suitable and beneficial way of treating neuroticism, which I find very, very positive. So I wanted to go through all that just to give an idea of the areas of the brain and how it can be affected by these different dysfunctions in order to get back to the five challenges of a romantic relationship. And here they are, the five challenges one more time. Communication issues, Misunderstanding, lack of effective communication can lead to conflicts. We talked about that. Loss of intimacy, loss of physical contact. Time together versus time apart, right? Busy lives and stress can reduce the frequency of intimate moments. Managing conflicts was another challenge of a romantic relationship. Disagreements are inevitable. The ability to resolve them constructively is crucial. Long-term relationships require navigating repeated conflicts and maintaining harmony. And we go back to the final two. Balancing independence and togetherness, which we kind of hit on that other point. Maintaining a balance between personal independence and partnership can be difficult. Partners may struggle to find healthy middle ground between time together and time apart. And then finally, evolving expectations. Over time, personal goals and expectations within the relationship can change. Adapting to those changes require flexibility and understanding from both partners. Why we brought up the dysfunctions of the reptilian brain, the mammalian brain, and the human brain was to show that there are some really difficult things that we can still overcome, or we have challenges overcoming without therapy. I will say that is to show the contrast of the top five challenges of a long-term romantic relationships are things that are much more within our reach in order to achieve. But what's the number one thing that you need to know in order to handle these things? One, you have to understand that there is a problem, right? You have to understand that there's a challenge that you're facing. So you need to have more information about that. Now let's look at why the reptilian brain can't handle these things. Its focus is on survival instincts. So the triune brain is not ready for these complex challenges of today's relationships. The reptilian brain is primarily concerned with basic survival needs and instinctual behaviors. It operates on a fight or flight basis, which can lead to reactive and defensive behaviors in conflicts rather than constructive problem solving. The paleomammalian brain, the limbic system, governs the emotions and social bonding, but is highly reactive and driven by immediate emotional responses, which means it's difficult to work on challenges in relationships. Can lead to intense emotional reactions to perceived slights or conflicts, making it difficult to maintain emotional stability and rational communication over the long term. And finally, even with our neocortex, our human brain, our neomammalian brain, higher cognitive demands. The neocortex is responsible for higher order thinking, planning, self-control, but it evolved more recently and is still developing its capacity to manage the complex demands of modern relationships. Cutting right there, our brains were not developed through survival of the fittest, through evolution, to deal with a new romantic relationship challenge that is this month's newest thing. What I mean by that is society, information, computers, relationships change so much faster than evolution in human beings that we're dealing with more complex, more intricate problems than ever before in our lives. And as humans, we never evolved to handle those things. These are things that we can only handle through education, through knowledge, through research, through a desire to have a strong relationship and action, taking care of something, right? And I think if we go back to how do you deal with these challenges then, number one, recognize there's a problem or challenge to address. Number two, you need to admit that your reptilian mind is not capable of finding a solution without a higher power, or what I mean by that, brain function. Seek to understand more about the underlying causes and learn about different models of addressing the challenge. Read books, take courses, watch videos, research approaches, engage in therapy, be active in the solution, and as Lizette said, take action. Our brains are capable of creating new pathways that can be trained to automatically recognize and adjust our behaviors and actions in order to overcome these challenges. We challenge you to recognize that you and we all need a better understanding of ourselves, of our behaviors, and of our relationships. Thank you for watching 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Have a great week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.